My guest is none other than Grammy winner and three-time Downbeat Jazz Artist of the Year saxophonist Mr. Joe Lovano. Welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Joe, you've stressed in the past to Howard Mandel of Downbeat magazine that your personal history as a working artist is the key to developing your own sound. Was there a particular point in your career where you felt that you had consistently achieved the Joe Lovano sound?
Well, I think every step of the way, you're always developing new approaches to improvise and to create music. And your personal sound develops around the people you play with and the different situations you're in. If you're playing in a large ensemble, the way to blend with other players gives you direction in your sound. If you're playing with a more intimate setting, let's say just with guitar and drums, with no bass, there's another approach, a different kind of atmosphere to fill the space within. You know, your personal tone, I've always believed, has to take shape with the situation you're in. The core of your sound is always there, but the ways of playing, the energy in the band, the rhythm, the music, gives me a lot of direction all the time. So my sound is always taking shape as I move along.
And of course, the diversity of your projects over the years is quite extraordinary. Is exposing yourself to such diversity one of your musical philosophies?
Well, you know, I started out as a really young player surrounded by some great music. My dad played saxophone and was a beautiful player around the Cleveland, Ohio area in the States where I grew up. And he was a beautiful player of the American Songbook, and he grew up in the bebop and modern jazz era, the swing era. So he had a rich vocabulary in his playing that he hit me to when I was pretty young. And I really embraced all the different conceptions about improvising and playing songs. And as I developed as a player, with his record collection and all, and I started to put together a lot of ideas from the more modern jazz era, more free jazz and different conceptions about folk music and different things, you know. So as a young player, I focused on having an inspiration from developing a vocabulary, you know, within the world of music. And it's always just built from there, you know. And then, of course, you know, when you start to play with people in all the different generations and the multiculturalism that jazz is, growing up around Cleveland and around all the players that my dad was playing with, I became very comfortable playing within that world, you know, playing with cats my dad's generation. Some really great players that were there and heard Charlie Parker and heard Lester Young and Max Roach with Sonny Rollins and people that came through Cleveland, Coltrane, you know. My dad played opposite a lot of groups when he was really young, opposite Stan Getz and Flip Phillips and others. So when I was growing up, I'd heard a lot of stories and was bit by the bug, let's say.
I was reading an interview recently with yourself and Dave Liebman and Michael Brecker in one of the Downbeat magazines of past years, and I can't remember which one of you, I think it must have been Mike or Dave, actually went backstage to a Coltrane concert and was quite shocked because Coltrane was very disappointed with his performance on stage, and indeed I think it might have been Dave may have said that it was an absolutely stunning performance. How do you personally gauge the success of your craft?
It's always daunting to try to, you know, judge yourself and all that. When you're playing and you're in the heat of the moment and into the music, for me, I feel my best performances are they have a lot to do with the interplay and the dialogue that I can create within the band. I'm not the kind of player that plays over the rhythm section and tries to get off as a saxophone player. I feel like the best performances are when you're integrated within the ensemble and there's some communication and ideas flow freely within the band. You know, if you judge yourself technically, you're going to come up short every time. That's like having an approach of practicing or something. For me, it's really about the communication and the interplay within the band that gives me a balance of what's happening musically, you know.
Performing solo and accompanying yourself with percussion must be a genuine artistic challenge for a saxophonist. Do you still perform solo with percussion? I understand you like to play the drums.
I grew up playing a lot of drums, and then as time went on, I started to collect instruments around the world, and some of my first tours in Europe and in Japan in Hong Kong, I started to collect some great cymbals and gongs and different sounds. And I set up kind of a setting with maybe 10 different pitched gongs in my loft after one of these tours I went on in the early 80s. And when I would play the saxophone, they would vibrate and sing out these harmonies and overtones and undertones in the room. And I started to play saxophone and hold a small mallet in my right hand. And I started to accompany myself on some of these pitched gongs as I would be practicing and meditating on some sounds, you know. That's how it all began. Because you could pretty much play the saxophone with your left hand. You could play almost the whole saxophone, not every note, but quite a few notes on the horn you could play with your left hand. So it would leave my right hand free on within the rhythm of what I was playing to attack some pitches. Mm. And my first record called Tone Shapes and Colors on the Soul Note label, that piece was the title track, was a solo unaccompanied saxophone and gong piece that I performed live for that recording session. And through the years, I've been developing this way of playing, and it's a beautiful exploration.
It must give you a further insight into how to interact with a drummer on stage generally.
Well, yeah, because you start to feel rhythm and sounds around what you're playing, and it started to give me a much more of a sense of phrasing and trying to say something with what I was doing on the horn.
Do you have a special routine prior to a performance or regimen?
Well, I make sure I could play throughout my whole horn at a very pianissimo volume. If I could play some low tones and some high tones at a pianissimo volume, then I'm ready to play.
Have you recorded the definitive Joe Lovano album yet?
The definitive Joe Lovano album? Well, you know, recording for Blue Note Records, my next recording is my 20th recording that's going to come out. And it's with full symphony orchestra and big band of my composition, recorded live at Philharmonic Hall in Cologne, Germany, with the Cologne Radio Orchestra, which is the WDR
Big band.
Orchestra and big band. Each one of my projects is a statement of the moment for me, you know. And I don't know if there is a definitive record, because each moment in your playing and development that you document, that's the moment for right now, you know. I've never gone into a record date trying to make a definitive record. I go in there trying to be as honest as a player as I can, and the different combinations of people are what makes the music come alive for me. One of my first records for Blue Note was called From the Soul, that had Michelle Petrucciani, Dave Holland, and Ed Blackwell on drums. And that moment and the document of that recording was a statement. That was the truth. And I feel it's a timeless thing when the music is like that.
I guess it's going to be up to history to judge it.
Well, in each recording had a different statement, like Rush Hour with Gunther Schuller, I think, was a definitive recording for me, with Gunther's orchestrations of Mingus and Ornette Coleman, Thelonious Monk, Duke Ellington, some of his compositions and some of mine, The way that all came together and the way we executed that project was a beautiful, flowing, natural thing for such a complex recording, you know. My Nonette, 52nd Street Themes, focusing on Tad Dameron's music, which Tad Dameron was from Cleveland and my dad played with him. And I grew up learning his songs and some of his tunes that Charlie Parker and Jizzy played. That taught me how to play the saxophone, studying his music when I was a kid. To develop to a point to actually put a Nonette together and focus on some material from that period, the 52nd Street period, with all the inspiration of Bud Powell and Thelonious Monk and Art Tatum and Ben Webster and Charlie Parker and all the cats, Don Byas. Everybody that was on the scene then, those were the players that Miles Davis and Travis Navarro, you know, those are the cats that really created an audience that we are lucky to have today, that opened people's ears up. Just today, to hear Sonny Rollins and to hear Ornette Coleman and to hear Wayne Shorter today is so beautiful. They're inspired from that period as well.
You and John Scofield will be recording with the Australian singer Katie Noonan shortly, I believe. And your wife, Judy Silvano, is also an accomplished singer. What do you think makes a good jazz singer?
Well, someone that has a beautiful instrument and a creative approach. Someone that could sing with interpretation and be relaxed and tell a story. You know, a lot of songs with lyrics have a built-in story. Now, to make that story your own and try to speak it with feeling and expression with what the configuration of the rhythm section is, you have to have a mature approach as a musician. Both Katie and my wife Judy are very beautiful musicians that can sit in and play in many settings with orchestras and within woodwind ensembles or out front as the lead voice. Those things, you know. For me as a saxophonist, I'm trying to tell that same kind of a story on my horn. Now, I'm not saying the word, but I'm trying to play the notes with an approach that each note is a word and with a conception of phrasing, like sentence-type structure, and paragraphs, which are choruses, and, you know. But you could play a solo. It could be a whole chapter, or it could be the whole book. It has to be within your approach, though. So it just doesn't, it's not just words, and it's not just notes. This project with Katie that's going to unfold now this week is going to be a lot of fun. And the rhythm section is going to be beautiful with Ron Carter on bass and Lewis Nash on drums and John Scofield and Sam
Kivas?
Yes, I think so. He's been working with Katie on some of these pieces that we're going to do.
Sounds like
so
a fantastic recording.
It's going to be a really creative session. Yeah, a Lennon and McCartney material.
Yes, actually. That's right. What do you like to do when you're not working and trying to relax, Joe?
Well, I live about 1 hour north of Manhattan in the Hudson River Valley area, and we have a really nice property with a lot of different gardens that we've set up, and Judy's a very serious gardener and a lot of different flower gardens and also vegetables and things, and we work a lot on our property. I'm into landscaping and doing all kinds of things out here, building rock walls and stuff, and I like to play golf and swim and enjoy my time at home when I'm not traveling.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to seeing you out here for the Wangaratta Jazz Festival and also some performances in Sydney as well.
Well, I've been to Australia a few times. I really love it there. I'm looking forward to seeing some friends and playing some music. Collaborated on something with Paul Grabowski a few years ago that was really nice.
That was a fantastic concert. I was there at the Angel Place Theatre for that one. What advice do you have to someone interested in the vocation of jazz?
What advice? Well, you have to embrace all the music and really dig deep into the rich history of all the great players that have devoted their lives and given us so much beautiful passion and love on all the different instruments. you know, whatever instrument might be your focus instrument, that's one thing. But to really understand and to know the musicians on all the different instruments give you a real insight in how you can play and how you can fit in an ensemble. To know as much about the people that played and the people that came up with each other, you know, how they influenced each other. You know, Coltrane didn't just play like that. He was on the scene with an inspired group of players that lit his fire. People like Sonny Rollins and Johnny Griffin and Hank Mobley and Benny Golson and Jimmy Heath and James Moody and all kinds of folks, you know, and we all fuel each other's ideas. And to understand those things is really important for any musician.
There was a sort of healthy competitiveness in those days, which doesn't seem to be as strong now as what it was.
Well, at that a certain era, everybody had their own approach that they were proud of and turned each other on, you know. Today, a lot of people learn how to play a different way out of the same books and the same approaches, and everybody sounds the same, and it's lacking in personality. But the real players that emerge will be the ones that have their story to tell. And that's what I was speaking about, playing from your personal history.
Yes.
Your experiences come through your horn.
Well, Joe Lovano, thanks very much for being with us, and we look forward to your performances here in Sydney and in Wangaratta.
Thank you so much for calling, and I'm looking forward to being there.